Welcome to Inside Out Radio. My name is Mark Spies. Our show is sponsored by the brand experts at 800 Degrees. You can find us at 800degrees.com. My co-host, producer, and the guy that makes this radio show actually seem like a radio show is Andy Lowe. Andy, how
Mark,
you doing?
How you doing this morning, my friend?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing well. How's that leg doing?
It's getting better. I think I'm past the injured and healing stage, and now I'm just at the out of shape, slow stage.
Well, good. You're just in time to catch the back end of the summer heat. So
yeah, it was great. I missed the best time of the year. We were talking about that this morning. I stopped riding in March and then started back in July. So I missed that, you know, the 65, 70 degree temps. Now it's just 100% humidity and 90 degrees. So it's awesome. All right, let's talk about the show. The show is dedicated to or committed to better understanding changes in the marketplace, the authenticity of brands, business in general, and really focusing on that original inspiring idea that became a brand. That can manifest in business development, brand development, and today we're going to talk specifically about brand development because we have an awesome guest today. Our guest is John Harn. He's the executive creative director with Definition 6 and a renowned endurance cyclist, and we're going to spend most of the time talking about that unless he redirects us. John, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. And yes, I used to be a cyclist. I get on the bike and pretend to go. But I'm kind of like you, Mark, at this point. It's I can't say it's injured. It's just slow.
Just slow. Let's blame it on heat.
It's 800 degrees.
There you go. And as I said on the last show, if I don't redirect myself or if Andy doesn't give me a hand signal, I'll end up talking the entire time about cycling. So especially when I have a fellow cyclist on the other mic here.
Yeah, he's even got the decal on his MacBook over there.
Oh, check it out. He does.
That's right.
Well, we need Rush's camera. You know, he films his radio show for stuff like that, so maybe we'll add
it's
that.
It's a good thing we're not doing that today.
It's a good thing we're not doing anything.
I'm thinking that guy really doesn't have a face for radio. I'm not sure why he does that. But
no, he doesn't. All right, so, John, let's jump right in. Tell us a little bit about Definition 6 and help us understand what is a unified marketing agency.
Yeah, great question to start with. Definition 6 is headquartered in Atlanta. And we also have an office in New York City, and we'll have important news if you keep up with our website at definition6.com. That's the number 6. You'll see some interesting news over the next couple months as we develop. But we are already a 15-year-old digital marketing agency, and we talk about unified marketing because really our strategy is creating the touch points between a brand and its consumers, advocates, users, customers, wherever in the point of conversion or in the point of a sales funnel that they are. So we have practices from social media through creative, through digital. As you know, Mark, we just completed some work for Coca-Cola for the Olympic Games. So we actually worked with them and their other agencies on the new MCR 8-pack of athletes. So the Coca-Cola 8-pack, we did the MCR work. We did work in particular on one site for one of those athletes, David Oliver, a hurdle and the current American record holder for the hurdles. And also we did something with basically a teen-focused global beat site. So we're involved with Coke extensively. As you know, probably we also worked with them on the Happiness Machine several years ago. So that's the typical example of what we do, but we also work with a lot of corporate partners, helping them build out their brand as well. So brand development, brand strategy, and creating those attributes of brand are all what the agency's about.
Are you guys going to have a Happiness Machine in London?
We are not, unless Michael Kogan, who is going to London.
Is he really?
Yeah, unless Michael's going to be inside a machine handing out Cokes. I kind of doubt that he will. But we most recently were involved in the World of Coke having its own happiness promotion here in Atlanta. And we filmed that effort for the promotion and created a little video, which is currently on their site and on YouTube.
All right, if you guys being anyone listening or everyone listening, haven't seen The Happiness Machine, is YouTube the best way to find it? Just do a YouTube
search.
YouTube
is absolutely the best way to find it. If you go Happiness Machine, the original one we did is over 2 years ago. It was at St. John's College in New York, and it's, you know, the one even we did just a month ago. These are, you can tell, these are real people.
No actors.
There's no actors. They're just real people being surprised by what's coming out of a machine. And obviously, at the World of Coke, it was outside, so we had to create some attractors, some sounds, some noises, things to attract them over the machine, and then we surprised them.
I challenge anyone to watch those videos and not smile. I mean, even just sitting there at your desk, it's just inspiring. It's very cool to watch the reactions that the people have when they walk up to the machine. You can tell they're skeptical, you know, thinking it's some promotion, whatever it is, and then within seconds, everybody from young kids to old people, they're just laughing and smiling.
Yeah, I think that what's really interesting about that is, you know, we're talking today about brand authenticity and brand, the genuine nature of the brand, and that product lends itself to people actually smiling. And the interesting part of this is during the filming of this, of course, we're taking out more things out of a Coke machine than just bottles of Coke. There was, we gave away a picnic basket full of goodies to a family. There were multiple small tchotchkes from hats.
I saw a guy get a surfboard, a longboard.
Yes, that was in Brazil. We gave away a surfboard right there at the beach. But the reality is that just the act of getting more than one product out of a machine because you're so accustomed to just getting one makes just about anybody smile. It's almost like a moment of, can I pick this up? Am I allowed to have this? And we kind of, you know, by the sounds and everything, like making a winner jackpot sound of it, we encourage them from a psychological standpoint to go ahead and it's okay, get it. But it's kind of interesting. Some of the most genuine moments of happiness come from just getting two products.
All right, so Coke clearly gets it. Is there a type of company that works better with you guys? Or are there companies that just, no matter how much you try to build these touch points and create these type of experiences for the clients, are there some companies that are just better suited to work with you guys?
Yes. I think companies that definitely are looking at all the channels beyond the traditional channels of print and just print and television and radio, although those are all very effective mediums and we do those as well, we really have built a strong set of capabilities in the digital side of things. And it allows you to have multiple touch points with customers all along, as I said, all along that experience. So, you know, brands tend to live with us over our life cycle. So, you know, brands that we become familiar with, brands that we like as children, although there's some maturity that happens as we grow older, there are brand memories that you have as a child with Coke and with other products that carry through. So Coke, their challenge is that their audience is pretty mature because children were drinking more Coke back in the day when people weren't as concerned about the, you know, the ingredients of the product.
Right.
So their challenge today is how to make the product relevant to newer markets and newer age categories globally.
All right. Last week we talked about business development and how things changed, and it was funny. We ended up in a very similar conversation about how communications has changed so much, that there's so many more touch points, so many more ways that the business development folks are having to communicate. It used to just be, you know, 3.5 TV stations and a couple radio spots, maybe some print, and it was all coming from one department. And, you know, within the first couple minutes, we're having a very similar conversation, how things have changed. How are you seeing it change?
Well, obviously, the first thing is that communications are no longer just pushed, they're pulled. So becoming, knowing who your customers are, being able to get them to actually solicit back from you, whether you're giving them incentives, whether you're providing them information, whether you're making them more relevant and important within their social sphere. Those are all techniques that are very effective and used in digital communication channels. So it's really, there is a ongoing dialogue. Now, and we talked also a little bit earlier about the ramifications of such an immediate, I just push the button and I can respond.
Everyone's got a voice, right?
Everyone's got a voice. As we know, unfortunately, sometimes people use tweets or they use Facebook in ways that are dismaying to brands. But it is no longer a one-way communication stream. It is truly a dialogue, and understanding that and how marketers can understand that and leverage it and use it, and also know how not to react to it. Because as we say, you can look ungenuine very quickly.
Well, it's interesting how this dialogue on the surface is a great thing, because we're engaging our customers, potential customers, but I would imagine it makes a lot of companies nervous, because we're not only empowering more people within the organization, we're essentially empowering our customers. That inbound message can be great when they're happy, but they're going to see through things, and their voice counts when they're not happy. Have you seen anything with the with your clients? Is it are we over that hurdle, or is this something that we're still wrestling with?
No, it's constant. It used to be that probably the only time a CEO of a major corporation worried about customer feedback was either he got a survey report that he had to answer to the board with, or it was a stockholder meeting and somebody was going to come and say something. Today, anybody at any point can have a conversation, whether it's, you know, taken off the try to mitigate where it is placed on the web. They try to mitigate where it's placed in the social media areas, but it's undeniable that it's 24/7. It's real, and that adds to the complexity of your messaging matrix and your communication strategies. No question, right?
So if we get back to this idea of brand credibility, it's a little bit of the chicken and the egg, and I want your thoughts on this. Are we talking about this idea of brand credibility today because it's the right thing to do, it's the direction companies want to go, or is this something that we are essentially being forced into thinking about because of all this transparency, because of social media? Is it harder to not be credible today?
I think it is. There is pressure, obviously, from the bottom line of any company that is doing business today with the public. Or with certain areas in the public. So they have to play the game, if you will. They have to respond. They have to communicate. But I think too many look at this as the problem, as a problem, as opposed to an opportunity. So I think that the companies that are more genuine are the companies that actually relish the dialogue.
Sure.
They actually understand that, you know, not everybody in the family is always in a good place in the family, you know. We call men call the doghouse, where the wife or significant other puts you sometimes. Sometimes just about any good company can be in the doghouse with a certain set of consumers for certain reasons, which is not their doing, or they did and they didn't intentionally do. So how you respond, though, to that is really really a way that you can judge whether you are being authentic, whether the brand is real, whether the brand is really truly listening and responsive, or is it just making noise to get out of the way? So we see examples of this. A couple of years ago, there was a great one that affected United Airlines quite significantly, and that was United Breaks Guitars. You remember the video where the Canadian band member has his guitar smashed on the tarmac while he's watching it inside the plane as it's being loaded into the airplane or unloaded, I don't remember which. And he did the smart thing. He's a credible artist, so he created a song about the experience. Great. Of what happens to his guitar. Well, the response was very quickly, you know, deny and some other issues, and it actually hurt United the way they responded. They could have, you know. And they eventually did the right thing.
After it was pointed out that they did the wrong thing.
After they did the wrong thing, yeah. Exactly. And even the guitar manufacturer got a plug in by, you know, supplying another guitar.
Of course, yeah.
So it was truly one of those where it was kind of ham-handed at first, and then they got it right after that.
See, it's funny. Just a few years ago, the expectation would be that it would take a few weeks, a few months, several letters, multiple phone calls, and eventually he might get reimbursed for part of the cost of the guitar. But I think it's...
They couldn't ignore 2 million views.
Well, they can't, and that's what's different now. I would expect that the response would be more over the top and that they see it as an opportunity and even... You know, make light of it. You know, we know they make mistakes. Every company does. And here's an opportunity to not just replace the guy's guitar, but take him to a concert, you know, fly him somewhere, do something a little bit over the top and spin it. And I think that would be my expectation today because of, you know, knowing the outfall or the downfall or outcome of what that guy has the power of. You know,
and it's
a good chance he shot, you know, with his iPhone out the window and watched it happen and then... You know.
Well, he actually created a music video of it after the fact, but and it's quite engaging. I kind of think of what I consider a really genuine brand and a genuine brand leader, and I think this comes to the fact that we talk about what kind of customers are ideal, and those are customers who understand marketing. They understand that marketing is central and key to their businesses. You look at a leader like Branson, how would Virgin have handled the situation?
Yeah.
I can think of many creative ways that they would have handled that situation and taken the opportunity to actually make marketing out of it. So they're taking straw and they're weaving it into gold.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what good companies do.
All right. So based on that, do you think there are ingredients or key components that make up brand credibility?
I do. The first, I think, is really being true to your personality. And, you know, even when, and as you know, we're both in the business of creating brand attributes. 800 Degrees does an excellent job with naming and brand strategy and a number of things that really pertain to the essence of the brand, and you help customers find that through personas and other techniques. We do the same thing, and we're kind of typically just behind you with, you know, offering clients identities, visual work that coincides with their existing brand standards or helping them develop new brand standards or using existing brand standards to create advertising and digital marketing. And the thing is, it is imperative that they stay within the personality of the brand. So, you know, if it's... if they're not an exciting company and they're not perceived to be an extremely volatile, exciting company, then creating an extremely volatile piece of graphic art to represent themselves doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
And it's a disconnect. So, you know, basically we are inundated with communications today. I think the number is over 6,000 impressions a day that the average person is seeing. It's incredible. You know, everything from the side of the back of a truck on the interstate to what you watch in between your shows at night to anything you see along your day or here. With that much going through, we have our truth meters on, and we are, most of us, very pessimistic, have to be proven. So it's really a situation of the brands have to overcome and they have to build credibility. And as we talked about, unified marketing is a technique that you can use to build it piece by piece by piece. But you have to be consistent in how you do that. So you have to have an overall strategy, and you have to stay to that strategy, even when you have the situation where, you know, your guys on the in the baggage cart just busted a customer's guitar or their computer or what have you. Chaos ensues everywhere. That's what happens in life. There's beauty in it. There's a way to create, to capture the creative in it. There's a way to celebrate the fact that you don't do it most of the time. Those would all be genuine moments.
Gotcha. Do you find that clients will see what works for other companies and then want you guys to help them do that?
Oh, my God. You just brought up what I hear from so many potential clients, and that is, can you give me my happiness machine? So you can imagine that we've heard that many, many times. And being, I think, a credible brand ourselves, we have to explain to the customer that, you know, that moment, that opportunity may have happened once in our lifetimes.
Okay, how did you know it was going to work when the idea came up with Coke? Because they could have easily been that, just because they were the first with you guys to do that, it could have not worked as it would for the next client.
It was part of Coke's overall strategy, though. So Coke had an open happiness campaign theme that they had been running successfully for a number of years. So it really was the extension of the machine was really another, if you will, technique in a already successful campaign. So they had a campaign already established, and they had been laying groundwork with that. Really, there are no guarantees with what was a shareable or viral video, mm-hmm. and that was the technique that was used here. It was the first, I believe, that they did where it was a really live, non-actor, true customer experience. And that it was really an experience first, and then our job was to capture that experience in a video format and share it. So yeah. It was successful in that way. But could I honestly tell you, before we were doing that, when we were scouting campus locations, like we scouted Georgia Tech as well. We ended up in New York. But No, I can honestly tell you that we were not skeptics. We go about our business of trying to build brands and credibility on a daily basis, but you never know quite the results of creative campaign work. That's why it's creative.
Right. But you did get there. And so there's got to be there are questions, there's a formula, there's a process you guys go through so that you get to that point, so that each client isn't saying, I like this, I like that. How do you get to that thing that is behind the brand, that made it a brand, that bit of credibility that you can then bring to life?
Well, obviously, the Coke and the smile idea is a longstanding idea. So it was showing that as opposed to just telling that story. So the way Coke had done it in the past is they've done a good job of telling the stories and using, you see actors, a lot of you look at the Coke material from the 40s and 50s, it's smiling actors, they're taking a drink, they're doing things together, whether it's on the beach or listening to vinyl, whatever they were doing at the time. It was all about relevancy in a lifestyle. And so we took it out to the other extreme, and that was really a joint strategy between the people in Coke and our brand strategist, which was to take this to and prove it in the real world. And that video was really a proof point that it was that kind of credibility existed, and you could create it very easily. And what I find very interesting about it, as I mentioned earlier, we just recently did it again at the World of Coke. And we were able to recreate that experience. We had smiles, people that weren't actually getting product or prizes who were right behind people or seeing what was going on. It was infectious. They were smiling as well. So, the smile is a powerful thing, and it's a human expression that disarms us. It relaxes us. It brings our own good pheromone feelings to it. So it's a very effective marketing and branding technique that they have, and it's why they're one of the most admired brands on the planet.
So this, the idea of living the brand, Coke more now than before is living the brand, and we're seeing that with other companies, this idea of, walking the walk, et cetera.
Right.
I can't really see it as a trend, because it's one of those things, skirts don't get longer. Once you go there, everybody likes it and it stays. So we're not, as brands, it would seem difficult for them to back off. Not just Coke, but other brands that are beginning more and more to live the brand. I think Red Bull is a great example in where they sponsor and who they sponsor and the things that they do. Does that work with a certain type of organization, or do you think the onus is going to be on all companies to live the brand and kind of prove it more so now than in years past?
I think any company that their chief concern or touch point are customers and a broad customer base, have to consider how earnest they are, how genuine they are, and how they reflect their true nature, their true personality to the consumer. And I think it's not required, but I think, as I say, I think it is really a good marketing technique to really get people to understand who you are. It's been used effectively by beer companies. It's been used by toothpaste companies. It's been used just about every category you can think of. Some of these, in fact, a lot of times it's the smaller companies that are just starting up, you know, and they're competing against P&G and Tom's Toothpaste. They're competing against the giants. They have to bring something else. You know, you can think of the beer companies that started out small, had the personalities, had owners, or had something that had added to their personality, and they built their, you know, their affinity with their customers that way. And give the other part of this is social media and other ways of digital media allow the customer to participate in the experience. The whole key thing about Coke is you're allowing real customers to participate in what their brand value is, what their core value is. And I think that that is one of the things that good marketing is all about, is allowing customers to participate. How can you channel them into positive participation?
Well, John, let me jump in here and ask a couple questions, because, you know, we've talked about brand credibility, we've talked about living the brand, allowing the customers to participate in social media, and I'm going to take the other side of this for a minute and maybe dig in here. Like, we were talking this morning about Chick-fil-A, for example, and so what we're seeing in branding, once upon a time, you could build a brand, and it was all about the value of the product, right? You know, is it a good product? Is it a fair price? Things of that nature. But now we're moving into an era where it's about the value of the company, the political views of the company, the inherent human values they hold, right? As we were discussing with the Chick-fil-A issues. I mean, how does a company protect itself from those types of things, especially with a lot of media influence and things that they're facing? I mean, maybe you can help us address some of those ideas.
Yeah, that is a very topical one, because it's happening right now. They're probably sitting somewhere in meetings at Chick-fil-A headquarters in Atlanta and pondering what is happening. They make a quality product, and they have always held their, they have some value system that they hold dear to them and has been successful with them for a number of years. As they grow out beyond that group and to a larger market, they are, you know, necessarily opening themselves up to criticism and to, you know, people with different alternative views. What they've done, though, is I think the question that I would raise as a marketer is, going beyond your product and your basic goodness of your product, do you have to, you know, bring up other things that would not necessarily get you positive comments from a larger community? So you got to remember, we talked about consumers or customers wanting not just to buy your product because it's a good product, but it's fitting within their lifestyle. So it's fitting within their whole ecosystem of who they are, their value system, who they hold in value and esteem as friends, as colleagues, as brands. And it's an interesting thing, because brands become personalities almost like people do. So we don't think of the CEO's name. We say Chick-fil-A like it's John down the street. You know, don't like his opinion. Didn't want to know about that about John, you know, like his ribs, but, you
right,
know,
right.
didn't really want to hear what he had to say about something else. So, you know, that's a community. And, you know, you can live on a street and have people with diverse ideas and different viewpoints, and you can all get along. At a certain point, though, if you become dogmatic about things, you're going to be isolated in the cul-de-sac. And that's kind of what brands have to think about.
It's interesting. It's as if in that conversation that's probably happening in a boardroom, I think they're realizing there is a line that we hadn't seen before that they may have crossed. If this controversy had been about cruelty to chickens, you know, we don't like to think of our chickens, you know, they're treated, you know, we've got free range and all this kind of stuff, and we're hoping that that process, and we know it's the old, you don't like to see the sausage made. Coke, in what they do in the rainforest, they're the biggest buyer of sugar, so their environmental stand on these things are relevant to the product they're selling. And you got to wonder if the guys at Chick-fil-A are taking a step back, wondering, huh, didn't expect the backlash when we made a big deal about gay religion, or excuse me, gay religion, that would be a big backlash, the tie between religion, gay marriage, and chicken. And all of a sudden, there's a backlash that they probably didn't see coming. Boycotts and all kinds of, you know, kind of blew up the Twitter world over an opinion that really wasn't relevant to the product they're selling.
Well, it really wasn't an opinion that started there, right? I mean, it was a donation. So it wasn't even like they went out and did something stupid and voiced an opinion. It was more, you know, a contribution, and these things get uncovered. So, I mean, it's the behavior, like you said, it's their personality. It's the behavior of the organization that you really have to be aware of, right?
And you had the interaction of another organization, which is the Henson organization, which, you know, markets the Muppets.
Yeah.
So you had more than one organization taking a stand, and here you had two organizations that are that both have brands and have marketing teams taking opposing stands to each other.
Right.
And that's another interesting twist on it. So you really kind of had not just two people. You had two organizations take opposing views, and you saw how the what team was doing a little better job of marketing. The other team was having to react to the offense. So, you know, I think that, you know, to distill a little bit, I think it's really what we're talking about is the every point, every touch point is important. And you can't not think about what is happening in, if you will, your matrix of messaging two steps away from you or four steps away from you. You have to really consider, you know, the ramifications of marketing. Now, do I think overall, in time, will Chick-fil-A be permanently damaged by this? I don't know, because frankly, you know, we know that in the blogosphere, so to speak, and in social media, there is a lot of, you know, of opinion and a lot of political right now, because this is a politic year coming. A lot of voices. So, are those voices necessarily the ones that eat chicken?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, they're probably getting some tips from the Dixie Chicks right now. You know, one comment and there goes a career. They probably thought that would go away. So we've talked about a couple examples of companies that are doing it right. I'll put you on the spot. Can you think of examples of companies who have missed opportunities in living the brands? Companies that you look at and think, wow, there's so much that these guys could be doing that would be authentic, genuine, and exciting if they just went out there and lived that brand.
I think there are examples that we see every day. There are examples I react to because they involve my craft, which is necessarily designing identities.
Yeah.
And recently, as I pointed out, that ING, you know, has done a complete identity change, and they've gone with what many in my craft consider the swoosh. The swoosh is a, for those of the audience, it's really any logo that is shaped on a curved line. And, you know, it seemed, to grow, in, popularity around 1998 to 2000. In fact, I knew a graphic designer that had created a website where he was collecting every major corporation that had evolved their identity to a swoosh.
Now,
with
does
their
the swoosh also, does that count, or do you guys count the arch that will go over and connect to similar letters in an identity, or go under and do the same? Is that in the swoosh category?
Yes, the swoosh can go anywhere.
That's great.
It could be the accent mark. It could underline the whole word. And it's interesting. It is part of our era of design. It's in contrast to what was done decades ago, but it is to the point now where there are so many iterations of it that, you know, my advice to anyone that's considering this is think again, because you're just not going to create a unique swoosh when there are thousands and hundreds of thousands of them at this point.
Yeah, back in, I think it was around 99 or 2000, I had a board whiteboard in my office, and these were the word parts that we were no longer allowed to use. And it was the syscom data, and it just went on and on. And it was kind of a joke, and the namers laughed at it that, oh, we wouldn't do that anyway. But then you just see more and more of them coming out. So I think namers probably have that same list of word parts and words that they just see coming around over and over again.
Yeah, and it's the one that makes you roll your eyes. But in the case of ING, obviously ING Direct was divested and sold to Capital One, I believe, here in the States. But I'm talking about the European parent, global parent. They had the, as you remember, kind of the red gold lion, and orange. And the orange was from the country of origin, obviously a popular color there. And the lion had some meaning to it. So it had a brand personality. Now, lately, the company had gotten into, just like a lot of the large American financial firms, had gotten itself into some credibility issues. But I think the strategy, and I love developing identities for people, but I think there are times when you're better off not to to develop a new identity, but rather to work with your individual customers and, you know, take the heat, but work over it. Make sure that they understand that you understand the responsibility that you have as a corporation, and work through it strategically as opposed to trying to create a new face. And this clearly, in my opinion, was creating a new face for them that they could hide behind. It's sort of like when the cigarettes company all changed their names after the lawsuits back 20 years ago.
Yeah, and that's a topic for another one, because I know some people that worked on that, and that was a pretty fun project from what I hear.
Probably very financially rewarding as well.
It was incredibly financially rewarding to the companies involved, from what I hear. All right, so those are the ones that are ING, I guess, is one of the ones that could have done things differently. Would you put them as in the same category as like a ValueJet that just did a complete clean slate and wiped, or is it a bit more subtle?
I think it was pretty much almost that.
Yeah.
Yes, they were. No question, there was a lot of press. They didn't change their name, so I'll give them credit for that.
Yeah,
they didn't do a complete ValueJet, but the identity change and they celebrated this with a video, which gave me absolutely no idea of what the real personality of the brand is at this point.
Yeah, and it's tough. You know, these are the things we run into with our clients as well. That we'll sit down in these meetings and they'll say, hey, we've done the research. It looks like from our research, the clients want X. Therefore, let's recast the brand to be that. And it always fails, because you can't take a company of, you know, 5 people or 50,000 people and say, guys, last week we were about quality and value. As of next week, we're going to be about excitement and innovation. And here's the new logo that shows it. And it gets back to that, you know, that one of my first questions today is, how do you uncover that thing that is relevant and exciting, and then develop that conversation with a client that they kind of get it, and they don't try to just go out there and be what the customers would have, why they're buying the competition, essentially.
We can go ad nauseum, you and I, on focus groups, because you can lead them anywhere.
That's for sure.
I think that the ask, I think, for marketers who are working with their company and trying to understand its personality is to look inward. I think that looking outward at focus groups for confirmation might be okay, mm-hmm. but not for insight. And I really think that the brand value is inside the company. It was interesting you talk about literally marching to a different flag, in the sense of, you know, in the Art of War, where they talk about flag. You can imagine if you change the flag right before the battle in front of 10,000 soldiers. There's going to be a lot of confusion. And this is what happens typically with a mistimed brand change, as you know. We've both been happy to work with clients, warn clients, and see the results. And but I think that your ask about being authentic is really, that's got to be an internal exercise with the key stakeholders and leaders and decision makers of a company, and really come to consensus around who they are, what brought them there, what got them there, and who they are today and where they want to be tomorrow. And, you know, and it's kind of like walking around in a room and asking a bunch of people that I barely know, what's my personality?
Yeah, right. And, you know, I had a conversation with the folks at Kmart years ago as they were trying to decide how they were going to compete with Target and Walmart. And I said, guys, think about it this way. Compete for the customer, not with your competition. And I got a blank stare. And they said, well, it has to be about price or it has to be about style. And I said, well, it does if you're Walmart or if you're Target. And you're not going to beat either of those guys on either of those points because that's genuinely who they are. You've got to find new relevant ground. And, you know, we saw what happened, you know, after they floundered. They actually launched a new logo about 5 years later, and I don't think anybody has seen it because they did what you said. They put the flag out in front of the 10,000, and nobody rallied behind it, and it was quickly pulled down. All right, I want to wrap up. But the last question I've got for you is tell us again how to get in touch with you. What's the best way to reach you?
Well, the best way is at Definition 6. We're, again, Definition, the number 6.com. I've got a, I'm on the leadership team, so there's a bio there. There's phone numbers, questions, comments. Send them my way. I'm also at John, J-O-H-N, Harn, H-A-R-N-E, on Twitter. And I'm also and on LinkedIn, so I give you lots of opportunities to take shots at me as well.
John, I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show today. This has been Inside Out Radio. We're brought to you by the brand experts at 800 Degrees. Join us each week, Thursday at 10 o'clock, as we continue to try to uncover this, what makes a brand tick from the inside out.